What's up and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. This is your host, Jonathan Gellner, and thank you so much for joining us today. On today's show, we have on Eddie Kornblum, head baseball coach at Midway High School in Waco, Texas. Eddie has been at Midway since 2016 and was previously the head coach at Belton High School. He has also been the Texas High School Baseball Coaches Association Regional Director for Region 1 and 2, on the All-Star Committee. He was an assistant baseball coach for Team Texas in the Sun Belt, and the head baseball coach for Team Texas in the Sun Belt. On the show, we spent a lot of time talking about fall development, the first 100 days on the job, and the mental game. He also goes into their leadership groups, core covenants, and different preseason meetings that they have, and we spend some time even on practice development. You're going to love this episode with Eddie Kornblum. Eddie, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I reached out to you. I don't know you personally yet. And I remember you doing a YouTube video, I think maybe during COVID, with Barry Rose. And I was like, man, this, like, Eddie does a ton of stuff that I want to do in my program. So I hope that you take that as a huge compliment, because I'm a personal growth junkie. And so I'll actually, for the listeners, I'll actually link that below, because Barry had a ton of good stuff. So did you. And we'll go through some of that stuff today. But, the first question that I had, because I just finished my first year as a head coach. And so now I'm reflecting on, okay, like, what do we do well? What do we need to do better? And what do we need to just continue to do the same things we did last year and just do it a little bit better? But what are some different things that you did this past season? Tell us a little bit about how that went. And then some things you're starting, you're going to stop doing, and then you're going to continue doing because they were successful.
You got your start, stop, and continues going. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a simple system. I like it. I like that.
Yeah, I do. I like it too. Good for you. Well, I can tell you this. During the summer, you always need time to decompress and kind of analyze where you're at with your program and what you have coming and what you have that left. And so going into the last season, I spent the summer really kind of thinking about, okay, we got our arms back. We're going to be pretty good on the mound. But we did lose 16 or 17 seniors, so the whole field's going to be different. So what are we going to be? And I knew the kids that were coming up were, one, very athletic. They could run, and I thought they could really defend because we can cover ground. Our range is a little bit better. And I just thought, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to really emphasize the speed factor. We're really going to put the bunt game into play again, and we're going to try to make the defense move. And so that's what we spent a lot of time on as we started going in August, September, November, December, into January, is how can we make the best of our players into this component of our game? And so we spent a lot of time bunting. We spent a lot of time base running. We spent a lot of time reading pitchers. Dirt ball reads. I mean, we just knew this is going to be the facet of our program. This is who we are now. And pitching and defense is going to win a lot of games. But I felt like if we can manufacture runs differently than we have in the past, I think we have a chance to be pretty good. And nobody counted on us to be very good because we lost so many guys. But I just knew this team coming is a little bit different than we've had since probably 2018 or 19. So that's kind of what we ran with. And it looked different, but it was a lot of fun to coach. It really was.
No, I love that. And I think, there's probably a lot of coaches out there that are shaking their head yes, like, okay, I just lost a ton of kids, and trying to figure out, how we can be successful with what we're got. Because, we're high school coaches. It's not like we can recruit a certain type of kid. So we have to be fairly adjustable on that, man.
Yeah. I mean, you got to look at what you have coming. I mean, hopefully you're building your program from the bottom up, and you're just not spending time with the varsity. So we implement everything from the fall with our freshman kids in the off season, and they're working out with the older guys all the way up until, middle of February. We keep everybody mm-hmm. together. And so we know, okay, this is what we have coming. This is what we're going to be able to be. Our identities may be a little differently in a couple of years, but, you got to coach your players to win in the things that they can do well. And, so I'm big on pitching and defense. I mean, I'm a hitting guy by heart, but mm-hmm. pitching and defense is going to win a lot more games than if you just come out swinging. So we spent a lot of time in the fall on that aspect of the game, but we also knew, okay, we got to get really good at this thing, this certain thing offensively, to make us, mm-hmm. A contender. And it did well, We got beat by Rockwall Heath in the third round in two close games. And we're still trying to get over those, that hump, getting past the Rockwall schools. But, you know, going 30-5 with all new team, I thought that was a pretty good year.
Yeah, it's a good year. And testament to, you know, your and your staff's ability to really adjust with what you got too. And I'm sure you're doing the same thing this summer. So tell us a little bit about, you know, what you guys, well, let me rewind, because there was like I mentioned earlier, you did a video podcast with Barry, and you talked about all of the ways that you implemented things into your program when you got there. So you talked about big time community. You were big on, you know, the fundraising aspect of it. So you've got a lot of guys that are listening that are either transitioning into new jobs or going to be new head coaches. So tell us a little bit about how you set the foundation of that really in your, you know, your first, I would say your first year, but what were some of the first things that you did when you got there?
Well, I got out and was seen. I think that's the number one thing I did when I first got here. You know, I was at a rival school. I was down the road about 40 minutes at Belton High School, and we were in the same district. And very competitive games, and I mean, it was grudge matches. But I think when I got here, I had to lose the identity of being a rival coach, and now I'm a Midway Panther, and I'm bought in from the ground up. So if you're going to do that, you got to get out and be seen. So one of the first things I did, I went to every Little League game, All-Star game. I was by the dugout, high-fiving guys, you know, doing a little Brian Kane, yes, yes, yes. I wanted them to know that I was all in. So that's the first thing I did. And we still do that to this day. I mean, I was at the Little League ballpark last night watching All-Stars play 10s, 11s, and 12s last night. And you just got to be out there and you got to show them from the ground up you care. And it's not just about the high school. It's about the community. And if you have a good Little League program, which we do, we have an amazing one here, you got to dive in. I even put myself on the board. I was on the Little League board for a little
bit. That's great.
And until COVID hit, and all of a sudden they started eating lunch at noon. I couldn't get away. The dinners were at 7 before, and now they're at noon. So I couldn't really get in there anymore, but I wanted to know what was coming. I wanted to know what was going on. I wanted them to know I cared. And if they had questions, I wasn't going to speak out as far as interrupting anybody, but if they had questions about what they, you know, about our program or what I thought, then I was there. And so that was the first thing I did. The next thing I did was we fundraised. And you know, I came in here, and I'm not saying anything about anybody who's before me, but I have a different perspective on facilities and what they do for your program. And one of the facility program, or one of the things I see in a facility, is you got to invite your players to stay. So I gutted our indoor building where our batting cages are, and I reached out to alumni of our high school that own businesses in the Waco area, mm-hmm. and I started taking people to lunch. And so I put a packet together. And said, here's our goals. I had pictures of everything. I had descriptions, everything we wanted to buy. I explained to the people that I was taking to lunch, this is why we're doing this. This is what's going to benefit our kids as far as their training. And they're going to want to stay at our field. And when I got here in 2016, there's two kids that stayed after school and came to hit or be around the field in September, you know, middle August. And I was like, okay, this is not how it works. So we dressed up the facilities. We made them nice. We made a put an office down here. We wanted kids to hang out. And now, you know, it took a while. I'm not going to lie to you. It took a while for those kids. But luckily, I had a son in the program at that time, and he started preaching what I was trying to preach and get guys to stay after and work and hit and be around the game and let's talk baseball. And before we knew it, we went from two kids to about 20, and then it grew to about 28, and then it was in the 30s. And now it's expected. I mean, kids don't go home after school. They stay. It's like open gym. And our facilities are part of the reason why we're able to raise money to do all that.
So I got to ask, what are some of your best fundraisers?
Well, my best one is me going out. I'll be honest with you. So here's how I do this. I get a list of names from an alumni or somebody that I trust, and they give me some business name or some people that have kids coming up into our program. And I take them to lunch, and I always say this, here's what we have going on. I'm not asking you for money. If you want to donate, hey, that's great. But if you don't, can you give me about 7 names of people that want to possibly contribute to our baseball program that will benefit their kids as they move up? And it never fails. They'll write a check. and they'll give me the names. So the list grows. And you just reach out, and it does take time. I'm going to breakfast early in the mornings. I'm hitting lunch. You know, we only got 35 minutes to an hour as a high school teacher and coach to do this, but I'm meeting them. I'm telling them, hey, I got a little bit of time. Can we visit, go over this? And they want to help. You just got to go out there and ask, and you got to be passionate about it and explain why you want to do it. And we're able to raise a lot of money and upgrade facilities. And what that does is makes kids want to stay here and be a part of something that they think, wow, he's really diving in and trying to do what's best for us. I think I'm going to meet him halfway. And so that's one. That's my own. You know, the other ones we do an email fundraiser that works really well. And there's a lot of them out there where the companies will take they'll ask for 20 emails from each player. We put them into a system where they start emailing out to everybody what our goals are, and we're able to bring money that way. And then we have our booster club fundraiser, which puts everybody into our booster club and brings money to our program. So those are three, and they end up adding up to pretty good money.
I really like that. I think that's good. And, you know, we're always looking for better ways to spend our time. You know, I mean, the last thing we want is to spend a ton of time and not have something fruitful come out of it. So I always like to hear what other people are doing in their communities. And so that's really good. So with that, you know, let's talk a little bit about, you know, what this upcoming fall is going to look like for you. So, you know, let's take some time to decompress. And then, you know, once you guys get back in August, I know you're very big on the mental game. And I don't know if this has changed since the video that, you know, I just watched like 2 days ago to prep for this. But you talked about you spend several days in the classroom making sure your guys know your standards and your rules and what's expected. So can you kind of walk us through that if you continue to do that?
Yeah, on the middle game. Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Well, when I was back at Belton, I friended Brian Kane, and Brian came down and we visited for a long time. I just wanted to know about what core covenants meant at that time. I didn't know, and I didn't know how to create that. So that really got me into the mental game. And I'll share something with you I think that's pretty cool. I played for a guy named John Scalinas at Kaʻapali Pomona in the LA area. And
is he the one that did the home plate analogy?
Yeah, 17 inches.
Oh, yeah. If you don't hit on that, I would love for you to.
I'm going to hit on that right now.
That was awesome.
Yeah, I love it. So Coach Scalinas was great. And if you weren't into what he was trying to teach you, you're always a donkey. He never cussed. You know, but he was very much into the mental side of the game. This is what really got me going. I still have in my hand on my desk right now. It's called Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maletz. And that was the mental book before the mental books. And what he would do is Coach Colinas would sit us underneath a tree down the right field line for 30 minutes a day before practice and go through Psycho-Cybernetics. It's basically how do you win at life. It wasn't just baseball, but he tagged it with baseball. And then after they did this, and I think you'll love the story. So I'm 18 years old at Cal Poly Pomona. And he said, boys, let me tell you something. And I'll give you a visual. And if you've seen his picture before, this man was probably 78, 80 years old when I got him. And he has pants like halfway up his body. I mean, it was past the belly button, just underneath the chest. I mean, he was the wisest baseball man I ever met. And he told us the first 2 weeks, we'll play every single day. We'll go through fundamentals. We're going to go take in and out. We're going to go through PFP. We're going to go through coverages, first and thirds. And we'll never make a throwing mistake. We'll never make an error. You're going to hit the cutoff. You're going to put the ball right on the chest. You're going to do everything fundamentally wise, but we'll never have a baseball on the field. And I was so confused. I was like, you know, I played for a guy named Sam Blaylock out of California. If you read Moneyball with Billy Bean, mm-hmm. It was Billy Bean's high school coach was my high school coach.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
So in the Moneyball, it's called the Baseball Factor. I played for Coach Blaylock. So I came from one coach that was so fundamentally sound and so into executing and, just understand hitting and all aspects of the game. And I go to Coach Scalinas. And now we don't have a ball on the field, and we have mirrors in the outfield wall where he pulled up these wooden planks, and there's mirrors from the foul pole all the way to kind of left center field. And we're sitting there, you know, pitchers are all going through mechanics like balance. They're separating. They're landing correctly. They're working on great, you know, they're tunneling their hand before we even knew what tunneling was. And they're really working on extension. Catchers are working on frame and footwork, blocking. Infielders going through footwork. Hitters are going. He's standing behind us when we're hitting, going, all right, no balls, no strikes. What are you looking for? And we had to yell it out. Hey, fastball middle, you know, center cut it, or it's going to be a little bit away if you like that. And we're doing everything in mirrors. And then he's, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen like an in and out without a ball. But he would have a guy with two wood bats, and he's pretending he's hitting fly balls, and the guy's clanking two wood bats, so it sounds like a ball coming off the bat, and we're taking in and out. And it was amazing. And that really taught me how to visualize and really put in the mental game into your program. And so then here comes Brian Kane, and, you know, he was amazed. I knew John Squinas, and we started hitting off a friendship. And he taught me about core covenants, how you build your program within. And that was amazing in itself. I just thought, oh, I could pull this off. I mean, how do you build your program? You get your players to buy in. How do they buy in? They take ownership of your baseball program. So, okay, how are we going to do this? Well, we take them into the classroom the very first year. I learned how to do this. And we said, all right, I want you to pick one word. All right, one word that depicts our program. If you had a guy from the outside looking in on what you wanted to be, what do you want that guy to see? He doesn't know you, all right? He's just coming to watch you one day. What do you want that guy to see? So we had kids saying, like, tough, hardworking, disciplined, fundamentally sound, a grinder, you know, whatever their word is. And then after that, they would basically just say, hey, okay, somebody else picks your word, stick with your word, and we're going to pick the six top or five top words that have been associated with everybody that somebody picked over and over again. And those will be our core covenants. And you got to live by them. And you got to buy through those words every single day. And you got to be able to display them. And that's kind of how the mental game started in my program. And then it kind of took off from there.
No, I love hearing that. And, you know, just tell us a little bit about how you implement it. Just with the daily activities. So it's one thing to really, you know, this is where I'm trying to bridge the gap between doing it in a classroom and then doing it on a field. And so some different things that, you know, we tried to do this year, we're going to try to have a failure station to where they have to reset, where they do something really hard. And every time they mess up, they're going to have a reset routine, or like having a key phrase to help them to, you know, reset, like step off, go through your routine. Because I felt like we did a decent job of introducing it, but getting them to take it from, you know, the cages to when we're all in there together and we're on top of them to the game, you know, some of them did it and some of them didn't. And, you know, trying to get them to, you know, because you hear all the really good players, they say, I got immediately better the minute I started buying into the mental game. So tell us a little bit about how, you know, some different things that, like, some practical examples of what all of your guys are like they enjoy doing, or things that you like, maybe the big pillars that we should be hitting on, and then just kind of walk us through some different scenarios on how you teach them and how you get it to show up on the field.
Yeah, you know, really it starts in the morning when you wake up. You know, what we try to do is we have a thing we use called the WhatsApp. And so I'm sending out a mental message as soon as I get to school. So every kid in our program is getting our message of the day. You know, like one of the things we say all the time is 100%, no more, no less, you know? So we want you guys to give us 100%, and I don't believe in 105 or 110. I think it's just 100%, but we don't want you giving 90. All right. We want you giving 100. So our mental message might be that one day. So that goes out to everybody. And I have a description of what I mean. And so they get it in the morning. And then when we get to the field, we go over the mental message when they get there. So we all meet in the dugout. I'm like, all right, mental message of the day. Who could tell me what it is? And, you know, there's some kids that, look, you can tell, hey, they hadn't looked at it. Well, on our message thing, you can tell how many kids have seen it and who hasn't. And we'll run those guys at the very beginning of the year to make sure they understand it's important. I mean, this is not something that you just pass over. Right. You got to really understand and buy into this. So that gets them early. But then we sell it. Okay, this is what it's going to look like today if we're going over base running. Or we're going over fundamentals, or we're on the bounce back screens, and we're working on footwork. I don't need 70%. I don't need you just going through the motions. Infielders, I need you going like, okay, I got to get the ball over the first base under 4.1 seconds because I know the leadoff guy could really scoot. He may be a 3.9. All right, so we're going to go through footwork. We're going to go ahead and understand our clock, and we're going to get through the ball, and we're going to sell the throw even though we might not be throwing. And so that's 100%. If you give me less, I'm going to call you out. You know, we're going to get a hard 90. We're going to take turns correctly to second base, 100%. So the mental message is starting in the morning, and then it's talked about at practice before practice and how we're going to implement it into our workout. And then at the end, we're going to go over it again. And so I think that builds your culture to what you want your team to look like and how you want them to prepare. So that's kind of what we do. The other thing we do is in our mental classes, I really study our team. So our mental classes are going to be different every year. You know, if our program is lacking in, say, buy-in or not being great teammates, you know, early on, there's a lot of kids that are coming from select ball or travel ball or showcase ball, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, the summers are about them. They're showcasing their talent. It's not a team aspect event. Right. So we have to translate those guys into, hey, it's not about you anymore, man. Nobody cares about your stats here. Nobody cares if you run a 60 in this time or if you're throwing 91 across a diamond or whatever you got to showcase it for college coaches. We don't care about that here. We just care about winning and being a great teammate. So we're going to have to kind of get your mindset differently now. So we'll do our class sessions on that stuff. What's it look like to be a great teammate? Well, I'm high-fiving everybody. I'm never sitting in the dugout. I'm the first one out of the dugout. Somebody does good. We're pointing at each other. You know, the whole pointing thing we put in our program, I don't know if you've ever seen this, but the North Carolina coach that coached.
Dean Smith.
Dean Smith. Mm-hmm. All right. So Dean Smith implemented in his basketball program, every time somebody scores, the scorer has to point to the guy that gave him the assist, mm-hmm. that passed the ball. What's that show everybody? Hey, the reason I scored is because of that guy, mm-hmm. not because I put it up. So what we've implemented in our program is to be a selfless, great teammate. Every time somebody bunts somebody over or they hit behind a guy, they get a sack fly, they get a punch out in a big inning, you know, whatever it might be, a block with a guy on third base on a slider down the dirt, whatever it might be, our kids point to each other like, hey, great job. And they're pointing, everybody's pointing out of the dugout. Mm-hmm. And so those are the things you just got to teach. And how do you teach it? You teach it through the mental game and the classroom sure. sessions and talking about it on the field and just always being all in about how important that stuff is.
Yeah. No, I really like that. I've started to do that too because guys will make a great play and then the guy at first will make a great pick and people are just silent. I'm like, are we watching the yeah. same game here? Like, point to the guy like when he makes a good play or saves your ass. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah, get out of the dugout. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So, like, I had Matt Denny on, who's a coach in Phoenix, and he said, you know, every time they do something good, they say, hey, hey, and then, like, everybody echoes that, which I thought was kind of a cool idea. And that then at Union, we would always say, hum, babe, like, hey, hum, babe. You know, that was just mm-hmm. kind of one of those things that sticks for whatever team, you know, that you're on. And so we started the pointing thing, too. It hasn't really caught fire yet, but I'm hoping to at some point of just, you know, one of our core values is mudita, which I stole from Alabama softball and Coach Murphy over there. And we're just trying to share joy and be, you know, when we talk about being good teammates, it's like getting out of myself and, you know, giving it to other people. And
well, one of the things that works real well, and you might want to grab onto this. So we inter-squad quite a bit in the fall. You know, we put mm-hmm. turf in our infield, so we're able to do that now. We don't have to worry about ryegrass. And so we scrimmage all the time, and we practice that stuff. We practice celebrating after games. We practice pointing at guys during the middle of an inter-squad, sure. high-fiving, mm-hmm. Doing all the things that you want your kids to do during games.
Right.
We do that during our inter-squads, and we demand it. If they don't do it, we're going to run at the end of practice. So we try to implement that, and it just becomes kind of second nature as you get into your season.
Right. Yeah, and like I said, year one, I tried to do a lot of things that I wanted, and some of them caught on. So figuring out, okay, like with this group, what is truly important, and you know, things like that really are. Yeah. It takes time. It takes time for kids to change behavior and to catch on, and you know, from the top down, and you know, all of this. The assistant coaches that I had last year were with the previous coach, and so that was hard. Of like, you know, making sure we were all on the same page. Cause even like during the middle of games, they would say some of the verbiage from the other coach and go, oh my gosh, like that's so, you know, one of those things of like, okay, like culture, they say 5 years, right. Or something like that. And so it's like, okay, made progress here, here, and here. And then we need to, you know, get better at X, Y, and Z. And, you know, now we've got this group coming up and just trying to figure out the right combination. But, you know, anytime you can be selfless and be good teammates and, you know, anything on that stuff, I think that's always that one, all that translates to no matter what program you're going into, it's going to help you win. And that's what colleges are looking for. So we talk to our kids about that all the time. It's like, you can have all these type of measurables, but if you help, if literally you help any team win that you're a part of, you're going to be valuable. And it may, you may not stand out on, you know, perfect game rankings, but people start to take notice of, okay, this, this group that is with this kid just consistently wins. And, you know, it's, at the end of the day, that's what guys are looking for at the next level.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. You know, one of the things we also put in, and I think it, it's always good, and I didn't really get into this too much early on, but after reading Matt Degg's The Pack, you know, he basically, I've always heard this, and I believed it, I just didn't know how to implement it, is that you're always going to win within the program if your kids basically are, you know, placing themselves within. So I was like, okay, how can I figure that one out? Well, Matt Degg's book is great. So we have, you know, five core leaders in our program every fall. And it's normally guys that have been really successful the year before, or there's always one guy I pick that needs to learn how to be a leader. We're going to teach him. So each one of those kids is responsible to report to a coach every Wednesday. And we have a core leadership meeting every Wednesday after weights. And they come into the our it's kind of like a mat room by our weight room. And we say, we meet with them. I said, hey, tell me about the 15 or 20 guys that are assigned to you. You know, it could be 12 guys or 10, depending on the numbers in the fall. And tell me about your group. You know, are they, are their shirt tails staying tucked in? Are they working hard? You know, are they giving you issues? Do you see anybody slacking? What about their classes or grades? You know, so they, one, get to know those kids. And they might, it could be a freshman, obviously, in the group, or it could be a senior that they're buddies with. But they're gonna tell us about those guys. And then they'll, then we ask them to be honest. Like, if somebody's slacking, tell us. So they will. And I say, okay, now it's your job to take care of it. And if you don't take care of it, then I'll take care of both of you. And so what happens is they start coaching those guys within the program. And if you can get your guys basically to police the program within, they're basically end up repeating all the things that you say. And before you ever can say it, they're saying it. And then we ask them, hey, take your core group or your group that you're assigned to for the fall. Take them to volleyball games. Take them to basketball games. Go to, you know, we have a restaurant here in Waco called George's that everybody loves. It's down the street from our school. Go to George's one night, have dinner, go to a movie, have them over, play wiffle ball. You know, whatever it might be. And they do. And now we have a core leadership group that's basically policing our program within, and they're handling all the things we don't need to handle anymore. And that's been a big difference maker.
No, I really like that. And so I figured the spot would be like Chip and Joanna Gaines' place down there. Like, you're not going to the silos?
I think they're zoned to come here. I think they went homeschool. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, we don't go there.
Oh, that's good. So with that, you know, it's funny because every time we go through, my wife's like, oh, we got to get up. I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever. Anyways, so what are some ways, that, you know, and this kind of plays into that too. What are some ways that you consistently build, you know, culture in the program? You talk about it a lot, and you mentioned like verbiage and signage and words. Like, let's double down on that stuff, because, you know, it's one thing to like hear it once and expect them to know it, but you're wanting them to be like brainwashed almost. And I'm trying to do the same thing. I'm like, okay, how many times can they see this and how many times can they hear it? And it takes them a lot, because most of the time, you know, 50% of them aren't necessarily paying full attention. So you're like, okay, but what are some different ways and different advice you would give in regards to like the consistent messaging? And you talked about, just to highlight, you know, your WhatsApp, and then you're sending stuff every day through that. What else can you give us? Because those are really good ideas too.
Yeah. So once you build your core covenants, whatever those five or six words that come up with, then you say, okay, so where are we going to see those? And they got to come up with that. And so normally it's going to be like they're going to see it in the classroom, on the field, in the weight room, in the community. You know, you know, with your family at home, whatever it might be, they got to be able to display those in five different areas or four different areas. And they come up with those. All right. Then they got to come up with a definition on their own. So if they say, hey, we're going to be grinders. Okay. What does that mean? All right. Or we're going to be hardworking. What does that mean? Or we're going to, you know, be great in the weight room or whatever. Whatever their core covenants are, they have to come up with definitions for them. So now they've come up with your core values. They come up with where you're going to see them, and they came up with how they're defined. Then we make a huge poster. And if you come in our indoor facility where our batting cages and offices are, you're going to see a poster. They understand through the mental message of that day what's going to be asked of them and what our core covenants look like. So they got to ditch, you know, if there's anything that happened in the classroom with a teacher that they get a poor grade, friendship issues in the building, or maybe their girlfriend and them have, you know, something going on they're not happy about. They got to understand when they walk through those gates or run through the gates here that they got to be ready to go and really understand what the message is that day and why we're doing it. So that's how we really just get them to understand our program and what we're asking them every single day. And it's a grind. You know, one of the things I tell our guys all the time is our program's not for everybody. You're going to have to sacrifice time. You know, UIL gave us an extra hour down here every single day. So we're going to be on the field and we're going to be doing the mental game. We're going to be conditioning. We're going to be lifting three times a week. There's a lot to what we do, but to be successful in life, you got to be able to sacrifice time and you got to be able to work hard. So we're trying to teach them that at an early age. And it seems like it's been working for us here.
I love that. That's good. And
but it's an everyday thing.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, I don't think kids are averse to working hard. I really don't. They just want to know that it's going to help them be better, or they're going to, like, kids don't mind sacrificing time as long as we're not wasting it, if that makes sense. So if you're like, we could have 3-hour practice, and if they're engaged the whole time, it's like, oh, like practice is over. Like what? Cause we'd have some 2-hour practice and they'd be like, oh, that's like, wow, that was fast, stuff like that. And then we could have like an hour practice where everybody, you know, somebody's not everybody is engaged and they're like, oh man, that took forever.
So, yeah. You know, I don't know how you run your practices, but you know, I coached football for about 17 years and I run our practices like a football practice almost. So it's short segments.
Yeah. Same.
So every time they're not moving, I mean, they're always moving and no, it's never getting elongated. And they're sharp for those 8 to 10 minutes, and we're moving on to the next thing. And then the only long period is going to be either our inner squad or our hitting workout. So you can't get around that. But yeah, if they're engaged and you keep them moving, you keep them excited, and you give them mm-hmm. a purpose to be there every single day, sure. Yeah, practices are fine. Yeah.
Well, and you know, kids are looking for community too. So that, you know, you call it sweat equity or whatever you want, but like guys are noticing when other guys are working hard, and it's a sense of community. I mean, it's kind of like CrossFit, you know, you work your freaking butt off every single day with a group of people, you get really close. And I think that's what really good teams do.
I'm with you.
So with that, like, let's talk a little bit about, you know, your standards and rules, and you know, we've hit on a few of them, but let's say, like, you know, you've got your core covenants down, you've got a few rules. Like, let's say, you know, I'm a player and I show up late to practice, like, you know, it's, or if you've got morning weights, whatever it is. So I show up like 10 minutes late, no call, no text, and I just show up. Like, talk to us about how you would work through that situation.
Well, the first thing I tell our guys in our meetings at the beginning of the year, you just got to learn to communicate. You know, everybody's different. And I coach our guys differently. I don't set so many rules, but I do tell them this: if you don't communicate with me, you're going to be in trouble. It's not going to end well for you. So if you're going to be late, call. Everybody has car issues, you know, whatever. It becomes a pattern, then we'll get you. But communication is number one. They also understand this: if they wear the wrong shirt to practice, or they're late to practice without a phone call or without a good excuse, when they get to the field, they take immediate left. So the way we enter our field is down the left field line. They take an immediate left. They don't even come in the dugout. They drop their stuff. They get to the pole and they just start running. And that never has to be said anymore. You know, if we're wearing a white shirt for practice and they show up in a red shirt, they see everybody else in a white shirt, they just head down to the pole and they just start running poles. If they show up late and we're in our indoor facility where the weight room is, they just head out to the football field and the indoor football field and they just start running. So really, it takes care of itself. We have implemented that from the get-go. At first, they didn't like it, but they get it. And everybody's the same on that deal. I don't care if you're a four-year starter and you've been All-State twice. You show up late without an excuse, you're running. If you wear the wrong shirt, you're running. And I'll forget about them, too. They always laugh about that because we'll be 45 minutes in practice, and all of a sudden my pitching coach will go, hey, did you see Johnny's still running? I'm like, oh, crap. Hey, dude, you're done. You know, but I will just get into practice and I forget they're even running, and that's, and they know that, and they're like, shoot, I'm not going to screw that up. So that kind of handles that. If something's going on, I feel like, you know, we have an open door policy with our players, not with our parents, but our players are, you know, more than welcome, and they're asked to. If you got any issues going on, man, you come in this office and you talk to us, we'll help you. So there's a lot of communication in our program. Oh, you know, good. We feel like we have the relationship with our players. They can talk to us anytime, or I'm going to approach them and go, hey, what's wrong with you? You know, why were you late today? You know, we're not going to be late. You know, I'm going to buy you this alarm clock. It's called the big ass alarm clock. I'm going to buy that for you. I'm going to put it on your, you know, dresser drawer, and that thing's going to wake you up. We're not going to be late anymore. So they understand. It takes a while to get there, but they understand what we ask of them and how we go about our business. And if they don't fall in suit, they'll get them.
Oh, I really like that. That's good. So, you know, with, and that's a part of it is you, you know, you talk to your group leaders about getting onto them as well. Yeah. And that's like you said, some of that takes care of itself. So the next thing that I want to really, you know, hit on is you talked about, you know, youth program involvement. And, you know, you talked about going to the games. Do you guys do anything to bring them to your games?
Well, you know, I think everybody does this. They have a Little League night. So we have all the Little League kids come out to a ball game, and they run out on the field with our players. They stand for the national anthem on the field with their favorite player or their favorite position. You know, we do that. We also hold a huge Little League camp at Christmas time, and we do one in the summer. And we also then take our players out to their fields in the fall. So our guys will all wear their midway stuff. They're seen. You know, there's 50-something of them or 60 of them in the fall, and they're going to all the fall Little League games at our youth complexes, and we're all over the place. And we're taking pictures with them. We're high-fiving them. We're standing by their dugouts. We're watching games. If they hit a home run, we're the first one in the dugout to high-five them. We want them to be excited about being a Midway Panther. And if that's having to go to those games and being a part of what they do on a given night or having them out here with us, man, it seems like it works. And I get more excited than probably the kids do. I had a kid that was messing with me last year, and it slapped me in the face joking. And I was like, holy cow, no way I get so mad at something like that happening. But I just started laughing because I kept looking around. That's funny. Like hundreds of Little League kids out here in their uniforms. I mean, it can't get any better. So yeah, that's kind of what we do with them. And it's a lot of fun.
I like that. Cool. Oh, that's good. So with, you know, when we talk about, you know, fall development, is there anything else that you want to talk about or add? You said you guys scrimmaged quite a bit, which is a, you know, a great thing. How do you keep them engaged during scrimmages? Like, cause they've just been playing for like the last 6 months. Right. So I'm like, okay, we need to try and gain an edge with playing some games during our athletic period, which we get. But I'm like, man, I wonder how burnt out these kids. Cause you know, when it comes to August, September, I'm a little bit burnt out too. So tell us a little bit about how you work through that process.
Well, there's a lull, you know, most kids are getting done late July. Right. And so we don't really start scrimmaging until September 1st. You know, we go through a week of meetings, or, you know, we have everybody in a classroom setting for the first week going on rules and expectations and things we expect out of our program. Then we have a week of tryouts for the fall. And then we get into, you know, fundamentals, and we start playing. And a lot of our games are based on not the scoreboard, but the effort they give. So if they give great effort down the line, and it's a bang bang play, and they gave 100% down the line, we're going to reward both groups on the great play and the hustle. If they execute a bunt or hit behind a guy or a sack fly or do stuff that's selfless and better for the team, we're going to reward those guys. So our games are a little bit different. They're not based on these going across home plate. They're based on a lot of other things, and the communication part of it, you know, knowing our coverage as well. You know, they got to take control of that stuff, first and third situations. And, you know, so it keeps them in locked in. They're not long scrimmages. They're probably 45 minutes, and then we're headed to the weight room. But we do it often, and it gives those guys on the mound about 20 to 30 pitches, and then we're moving on to the next guy. So, yeah, I think of the short and sweetness of it and make it impactful and understanding that this is what we're trying to accomplish that day makes it, you know, makes it hop a little bit quicker. It has a little bit more impact to it.
No, I love hearing that. I think that's, you know, that's an awesome, awesome idea. So let's get into, you know, you get into the fall and you guys are scrimmaging, you're trying to develop your players. And you said you guys don't have tryouts for a while, right? Is that like January?
Well, we have a fall tryout.
Okay.
So second week of school, whatever that date is, we have a fall tryout for a week. And then we decide, okay, these are the guys we're going to carry for the fall. We feel like they could possibly help us, or the returners, whatever it might be. And then we go through our meetings the following week. So I'll meet with every player in our program, okay. Say, hey, here's where you're at. We foresee you as, you know, this role. You're going to be a backup middle infielder, or you're going to be possibly our starting shortstop, mm-hmm. or center. Or, hey, I think you're going to be kind of a relief guy, or you might be our dude on the mound this year. We give everybody an honest opinion where they're at that time. All right. And that gives everybody an idea, okay, I either got to maintain what I have and get better, or I got to win out a job.
Okay.
And so we the meetings are a big part of kind of making sure everybody understands this is where I'm at in September, 1st of September or end of August, and this is where I need to get to by, you know, end of January. And so I think those are valued. It's important to have those conversations, good, bad, or indifferent. And we're cutting guys, and I hate to do that, but unfortunately, that's just the nature of the beast. Mm-hmm. And so we have those hard conversations with kids because we just don't want to carry kids in our program and never play where they can be really good at something else. So we're honest about that. And then we get into, you know, what we call our fundamental and scrimmage phase where, you know, I really never hit a fungo or have a ground ball off a machine. We pull out our bounce back screens. If you mm-hmm. know Dave Cohen from Wall Ball, we use those at all positions on the infield, and we go through paddles, footwork, expectations, understanding clock. You know, if every runner's different, you know, you got to be able to get rid of it. You got to be able to throw with a two shuffles, one shuffle, or no shuffle. Mm-hmm. And we're going with double play feeds and flips. We're talking to third baseman about arm angles, depending on where the ball takes you. The catchers are getting their fundamental coaching from their catching coach, and outfielders are doing the same, and all POs or pitchers are working with our pitching coach on mechanics. And we spend a lot of time in the fall on that stuff. And I've even had players ask me, are you ever going to fungo us? Hmm. No, you're not there yet. You know, sure. Once you get better with your footwork and your hands. Hmm. You know, I got a good story for you. I think you'll enjoy this.
Sure.
So when I got over to Mount Carmel High School in 1989 or 88 with Coach Blaylock, he grabs me the first week I get to that school because my parents had moved. And he said, hey, you can really hit. I said, thank you. And he said, you suck on defense. <That's awesome. laughs> And I started laughing. He wasn't wrong. He wasn't. You know, I was that typical kid that hit all the time and never took a ground ball. And I was not very good. I even had a coach my sophomore year of high school, a guy named John Harmon. And I grew up in Poway, California, which is the North County of San Diego.
Okay.
And I had a coach actually go out to the mound for on a mound visit to cuss me out. He never even talked to the pitcher. So that'll give you an idea how bad I was at fielding. Mm-hmm. So Coach Blaylock hands me a sardine can and a racquetball and say, give me your glove. You go against that racquetball court out there and you throw that racquetball and that sardine can right there with a little rubber tube in the back of it is your glove. And I will not give your glove back to you until you understand how to field the ball. So I would go against that wall all the time, every day for hours. I'd go home against the garage door and do it again. And then finally, he probably like November, he goes, all right, I'm ready to fungo you. I'm going to hit the racquetball, and you're going to catch the ball with the sardine can. I'm like, holy crap. And I was clanking the ball everywhere. It was awful. But then I started realizing kind of how to center my hands, how to let the ball kind of give a little bit. Hands started getting softer. And then he gives my glove back, and it was incredible, man. I made two errors that senior year, and one was throwing. And he taught me the value of positioning your body, having great feet, mm-hmm. you know, understanding that the ball dictates kind of what you do. Not every fundamental approach is the same. Mm-hmm. And so I learned a lot about fielding with him, and then going to Coach Galinas about understanding. He used to say this all the time, if your feet never get there, you'll never get there. So how are we going to get our feet better? So we do a lot of ladder drills. We do a lot of shuffle work. We do a lot of bounce back of paddles. We do a lot of different angle throwing. One of my favorite things to do, and the kids love it, is we do an infield throw around for a minute. And we start at home plate, and the ball has to get to each bag across. So you're touching four bags as quick as you can. And our goal is to be over 35 to 37 touches in a minute.
That's good.
That means you cannot bobble it. You can't have a bad transfer. You can't drop it. You can't make a bad throw. And this team last year really defended well. I mean, one of the best defensive teams I've had. We'd only made one error up to the last game in district. And they were really good. But if you can't learn how to field the ball, there's nothing that blows me up more than an error, you know, because that pitcher deserves better than that.
Right.
So we spent a lot of time on that in the fall. And our outfielders understand how important it is a cutoff man, how important it is a long hop, a bag, or home plate, working on angles, you know, just things that we think are going to make it better for our pitchers to be successful.
I really like that. So you kind of walked us through your player meetings, and then do you guys have some in the preseason too? Like after, so you said those were in the fall after cuts. Do you have some for before the season?
We do. So we have another tryout at the end of January. Okay. So the third Friday in January is, I think, is where we start up our tryouts again. It's a 3-day tryout. And as soon as those are over, I meet with everybody. And it's a hard process because you're meeting with the freshmen first to let them know their fate and where they're at in your program and what you foresee out of them. And, you know, we talk about their ceiling and talk about where they could be down the road and where they're at right now. We get through all the freshmen, and then I start meeting with the sophomores and let them know, hey, you're going to be on JV. Hey, you have a chance to make the varsity. You're going to be up with the big guys until you prove you can't be there. And then we move on to the juniors and have to have those discussions. Okay, looks like you're going to play quite a bit on the varsity. It looks like you might be on the JV. And that's always a hard discussion for a junior to think that he may be on the JV when his goals will be on the varsity. But you try to sell it, like, you get to play all the time. Your development is crucial for your development because if you're sitting on the bench, you're not getting better. We may flip you back and forth between the JV and varsity.
Sure.
And then the seniors, hey, this is where you're at. You're going to be a starting whatever, or you're a role player, or you're going to be a backup, or you're a guy that may never see the mound. But we love you, and this is why we love you.
Sure.
And so, yeah, we go through those meetings, and I think those are crucial. I have friends that have been coaching a long time, and they do stuff like they just post it on the wall. How bad is that, man?
I know.
You know, and I love these coaches. They're really successful, but I'm like, you're just going to post a kid's fate on the wall? You know, that's kind of impersonal. So, and one thing I always tell our parents in our parent meeting at the beginning of the season before we get going is that you may not like what I say, but I'm always going to be honest. And you can never fault me not being honest and not being passionate. And, you know, and I'm going to have those discussions with your kids. And you might not like what I say because you want them to be a starter or whatever it might be, but it's going to be honest and it's going to pave the way for better development.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I think meetings are huge. And if you don't do them, you're missing out on understanding your kids or giving them a time to really speak to you. And, you know, they got to learn to grow up. You know, we don't have parent meetings here. You know, I will not meet with a parent. The kids got to advocate for themselves. And I think those meetings are a big part of them learning how to do that.
I get that. So with that, you know, we've got, you talked earlier about, you know, your former football coach and you take pride in conducting efficient practices. Can you kind of walk us through, you know, a typical, let's say you guys still play what, Tuesdays and Fridays in Texas?
Tuesday, Friday, Saturdays, if you schedule a Saturday game, then you have your tournaments early on,
Yeah, so let's say that you have a, you know, a Wednesday or a Thursday practice of where you're trying to get some work in and you're trying to get, you know, you're trying to gain some reps or some inches, and this would be during the middle of a season. What's that look like for you?
So normally we will meet in the dugout, go over our mental messages of the day and our expectations and our practices and why we're doing what we're doing that day. I think they need to understand that. Okay, why are we doing what we're doing? Well, here's why we're doing it. and we got to set the tone for that and let them know, all right, during BP, this is what our goal is during BP today, or during PFP, this is what the opposing team's going to do. This is why we're running this this PFP type workout today. So we go through that, and then they get on the field. They go through their stretching. All coaches are out there during stretching. They're walking, talking to the kids about their day or whatever it might be. We want to be all into them. Then we don't go and throw. We go through our agilities, and then we go right into base running. So base running is the first thing we do after stretching. And we're either doing reads or breaks at first, dirt ball reads, reading lefties in our system, you know, whatever it might be. And then we go to second, and we work on stealing third, and we're going to bunt reads. So whatever you want to do, we always do base running first right after stretching. And then we go into what we call our TCU drill. And we do this quite a bit where we put all our players on every bag. So if you have, say, I don't know, 16 players, you're going to have four at home plate, four at first. I hope I did the math right. Four at second, four at third. And we are bunting. So we have a machine on the field, and we're going, all right, first sack bunt with runner on first. Where the runner at first is reacting, the runner at second is reacting to a bunt, the runner on third is like a safety squeeze. So the batters have to get the bunt down in our approach that we teach. If they don't set up right, they're going to run and touch the foul pole. So we make them set up right, create their angle, get the bunt down. And everybody, all 16 guys, got to do that. Then we go to round two. All right, runner on second or drag bunt. We're going to drag bunt for a hit or squeeze. So we end up doing three rounds of whatever bunt part we're going to do. And they got to react right, and they got to execute the bunt. And then as soon as that's over, we go into throwing. And so they get their throwing program in, and then we're going into our, you know, we could be doing cutoffs and relays that day. We can be doing three fungo outfield where they're working on long hops to bases. We get to be doing double cuts. We could do pop-up communication. You know, so we're always working our outfielders every day in some aspect of what's going to make them prepared for a game. And then we go into, probably we'll go into our, after that, we'll go into bunt coverages. So bunt coverage is first and third in PFP, we almost do every day. And it's short, though. It's like 8 minutes. And so we'll go into bunt coverages. You know, runner first, whatever our coverage is called. I'm not going to call that out now. But we'll go into runner second. You know, we'll go into first and third bunt. So we do our bunt coverages. Then we'll go into first and third defense. And then we'll go into, you know, after that, our PFP, and then we'll go into our offense, and then we'll scrimmage. So, and everything's happening fast, though. Sure. And we're kind of cruising through it as quick as we can, but we're doing, you know, the old Brian Kane adage is do a little, a lot, but not a lot, a little. We do a little, a lot all the time. And the only thing that's extended out for a long period of time is our hitting.
So start to finish, what? How long do you guys usually take?
Well, our period doesn't go across, go against our 8-hour rule for the week. So we're here at Texas, we're allowed 8 hours a week. Well, during the period doesn't go against that because it's a class period. So, and then game days don't count against that 8 hours. So normally we're, you know, during the period, we start meeting at 3:20. Mm-hmm. Period ends about 4:05. And then we go into practice. We just continue on, and we're probably done like around 6.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, cool. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, you talked a little bit about parenting advice, mm-hmm. but let's talk about getting ready for the postseason. So you're getting into, and Texas is friggin' long postseason, a month, right? A month to 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. So whenever you're finally done with district games, is there any change into what you are preparing to do to get ready for a postseason run?
Yeah, I think the thing I do differently is now every practice is based on our opponent. It's almost like a scouting practice, you know. So we do a really good job. I think my coaches do a really good job of scouting. And then, you know, normally on a Sunday, and my wife, she gets wore out by this, but I'll sit down all day Sunday, and I'll go through everything that I think is going to help us prepare for them. You know, and I hand a packet out to all our kids. They have a packet of every scouting card on each opposing hitter, every tendency report, how the guys throw, you know, whatever I feel like they need to know and prepared. We have a whole packet we hand to them on. Like if you're a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series, or you're a Friday, Saturday with the Saturday possible doubleheader, you know, whatever it might be. We're handing our packets to our players on Tuesday, Wednesday at the latest, depending on how in depth I am on it. And then our practice is around that. Okay, this team loves to delay. All right, so how are we going to defend against the delay? We'll go in first and third defense. Or, hey, they don't handle the first and third offense well. This is what we're going to do offensively to, you know, put them in a bind. So every practice then in the playoffs is really based on, you know, how we're going to prepare for the opposing team. But then you have your normal stuff. You know, we're going to get a rep of ground balls. We're going to get a good PFP in. Make sure our bullpen sessions are intense. You know, you got to have a lot of intent to your bullpen. So we'll put batters in there during hitting, and they're working on tracking balls, reading spin. And so our bullpen sessions are big. And just the idea behind the playoffs, I mean, selling our kids on why it's important here at Midway to be playing for a long time. And so a lot of that. And then our team dinners, too. I mean, every playoff week we're having team dinners. And we do that during district, but now they're at parents' houses, and it's a lot more fun. And it just amps up That's the awesome. Excitement, yeah, of what we're about to get into.
Oh, I love it. Last thing I really want to go over, I've got some quick hitters for you, and then I'll let you off the hook. What is a drill that your players love that we can steal from you?
Well, I think our infielders really love the infield throw around for a minute. And that's every time I pull that out, we're going to do this before we get going for the day. They love it. I mean, they're always wanting to know what their score is. And so that's one thing they love, and they take a lot of pride in it. You know, we put in a sign scrimmage this year that I didn't really do before, but since our team was a little bit different than I had in the past, and we really could bunt, we really could run, we could really execute movement on the base pass and put the defense and get them moving, we put in a sign scrimmage. And so everybody's got a band on. I'm calling out different calls. They got to react, and they got to execute. And so they had a lot of fun with that. We put our JV on the field as defending it. Varsity guys are on offense. Nice. And they're having to execute whatever I call out each batter. I'll go, hey, runners on first and second. All right, here we go, sack bunt. They got to execute it. Or we got to run on first. We're going to go sack bunt steal and hopefully get the guy to third. Or we got to squeeze here, you know, whatever. So that was pretty big. They really enjoyed that. And then the other thing they like is pretty cool. We have a four-camera system here where during scrimmages and games we videotape everything. And we do that to make sure our alignments are good in the outfield on cutoffs, that our swing pass are, you know, hopefully as clean as can be, our pitching. This is what we need to work on. And we download all our video onto Huddle, and they all each have a Huddle account. And we have a video room here now where they can watch previous games or previous scrimmages or whatever. If I feel like they're not hitting right, let's go ahead and film them during batting practice today. And they love going in there and seeing all the things they do really well or things they need to work on. And so they spend a lot of time in there, which thank God I put that in. I didn't know if it was going to be a success or not, but it's been pretty good. And so that's been fun. And I think the last one I would throw out there is the 80-foot bunt game. We move our bases to 80 feet, and you got to defend it, and you got to execute it. And so we keep score by each bag you touch is a point. So if you have run on first and second, you get the bunt down and everybody's safe. Well, that's 1, 2, 3, 4 points right off the bat. So we put that scrimmage in. So that's a lot of fun. So those are some things that I think that they enjoy doing.
Cool. What is the latest thing learned that's made you better at your job?
Not to get so pissed. I'm very competitive. And there's an ongoing joke in my program that if I could stay under two stopwatches getting busted a year, then I've done pretty good. So I've tried to maintain. I've gotten better as I've gotten older. I think the biggest thing is just, hey, prepare well in your practices and trust them as they play. And I think that's what's really carried me here recently, is that I got to really believe our guys can really do what we're asking them to do if we prepare them right.
Awesome. What is one thing that you've implemented that's made the biggest impact on your program that we haven't talked about yet?
I think it's just teaching our guys to be great teammates and loving each other. That was never more evident than this year. And I'll tell you this little story. We get knocked out in the third round by Rockwell Heath, and we're on the field at 40 High School. and we just lost, you know, we lost 3-2, 2-0 against a really good team, but I thought we were pretty good too. And they were obviously devastated. But, you know, oh, here's where I'll get to. We have an FCA program that's amazing, and our kids take ownership over FCA meeting, and they're very in tune with God and with the Bible and sharing the impact of FCA on their fellow teammates. Well, their prayer session after the game was 20 minutes long. They didn't want to leave. And then hugging in tears was probably another 15 or 20 minutes. And then after the game was over, they wanted to go eat. Well, the only thing open at that time was Whataburger. So we sat in Whataburger till they basically kicked us out. So what I'm trying to tell you is that I think the biggest thing that impacted our season and really taught me something was if you can get a team to really care for each other and really play for the aspect of their teammates, there's a lot of value there. And I never saw that more than I saw on this year's team. And that FCA group that we have, I'm going to throw a little name out here, Caleb Bundy, one of our relief left-handed pitchers. He took that thing and ran with it, and it was amazing how bought in our team was to that. And that made a big impact on our group, because if they're playing or not playing, they were all in. And I thought that was pretty cool. I really did.
That is very cool. And then the last one I've got for you here is, what is a failure that you've had that's helped propel you forward?
Well, I think you learn from every loss, especially at the end of the year. You know, I can't really think of one, but I know this. I take away from each season and I look at the losses and I'm thinking, what could I have done better? And if, you know, nobody knows everything and you're learning as you go. I'm 52 years old and 26 seasons in, and I'm still learning as I go. And I think if you can really just kind of step back for a second and really evaluate, what did I do to cause that loss? If I did anything to cause that loss, if I didn't, what can I do to make my players better, to prepare them? And one of the things I was taught a long time ago is put your players in the position of your practices for every play that could happen, every ground ball, every type of spin, you know, backhand glove side, reading big hops or have to take a step back, whatever it might be. If you can prepare your players for anything that could happen in the game, you're going to be way better off than if you didn't. And so I think I basically am learning that, you know, what can I keep doing to get better? And if I can keep getting better, that means my teams are getting better. And so I think that's one thing I've really taken.
Oh, I love that. Are there any resources that you could think of off the top of your head that you would want to leave our listeners with?
Well, I don't know how many guys, they say they're readers, but I'm a big reader. And I think if you really want to prepare your guys to be mentally tough and buy into each other and be great teammates, find some mental baseball book that you will buy into and really enjoy reading and dive in. It doesn't really even have to be baseball. I tell you, the best coaches to me, and I don't mean to pick on any sports, but I love reading about basketball coaches. Basketball coaches, for some reason, they get it, man. They understand how to bring teams together and really get the most out of their time. And, you know, whether it's Dean Smith or Roy Williams or, you know, John Wooden, you can really learn a lot from those guys. And I really enjoy reading books by those guys.
Oh, I love it. Well, Eddie, I appreciate you, man. I'm looking forward to getting to know you better. Man, it's such a enlightening conversation, and I love getting to know, you know, what people do differently.
Right.
And you hear a lot of the same things with the podcast, and I get to interview a lot of people, but you brought it today and you gave us a ton of different information. If there's anybody who wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do so?
My email, probably the best, because I check it all the time. So I'm at eddie.cornbloom, and Eddie is eddie.cornbloom, CORNBLUM, at midwayisd.org.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Eddie, I appreciate your time, man, and I'll put that down in the show notes below. Is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners before you go?
No, I mean, I'm a constant learner. Anybody wants to call me and share stuff with me, I'd love it. I love talking baseball, and I appreciate you so much for having me on. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you so much for listening to Ahead of the Curve. If you would do us a huge favor, leave a rating or review wherever you are listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone and tag us on social media. That would help us so much with growing the show and helping others to stay ahead of the curve.